Alright,
we're
going
to just let this thing go for a while and see how it behaves.
It's literally the opposite of that. Let me just say that my cup today overflows with leftist tears, and I'm not upset about that. But listen, these people tried to make everything about personality and about the fact that she was a woman or the fact that she came from, you know, a non-white background. Most people actually don't care about that, and if you look at the breakdown of voters, you will see how women voted, how blacks voted, how Hispanics voted. I mean, across the board, this was a resounding rejection of that, you know, politics of identity like that. This is, I think, it's what all the Democrats had in our country, was try to make it about some identity as opposed to what policies actually affect your, you know, daily life. So when groceries cost 50% more than they did 4 years ago, people feel that.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, can we talk about what this means for the people in Texas? We spoke about the border, the immigration crisis, but also what's on voters' minds there in America is foreign policy.
Well, sure. If you look around the world, you know, the danger lurks everywhere. We have, you know, China and Taiwan. We have Russia and Ukraine. We have the Middle East situation. So I think people are uneasy with the inability of the current administration to negotiate with these foreign powers. And I think people saw Kamala Harris as someone who just simply would be wholly inadequate at the negotiating table. You know, with the, imagine her sitting across the table from Vladimir Putin or Xi Jinping. I mean, like, it would just be laughable. I mean, Donald Trump has a track record of being able to negotiate with all these people. You know, he gets a lot of credit because he actually compliments them. But the way he's complimenting them is because they were reasonable when he negotiated with them. And he was able to negotiate, you know, good outcomes for America, which, I mean, I think most voters look at that and like, no, we want that back in the White House.
What about J.D. Vance? What can we expect from him?
Man, he is a rising star. I mean, is there anybody more eloquent or knowledgeable or just an even-keeled personality? Mm. I think a lot of people have seen these long-form interviews he's done where they just see him as he's a regular guy. He's, you know, he came up from a disadvantaged background, but he has excelled and really to the highest levels now and is very accomplished. And I think people see him as sort of a steady hand who can back up President Trump. But also just be there as kind of the future of the party four years from now when President Trump's term is over.
Absolutely. It's going to be interesting to watch what happens over the next few weeks, months, and then, of course, the next 4 years. Tarrant County GOP Chairman and Beau French, thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Joining us now is Washington editor of The Spectator, Amber Duke. Amber, thank you so much for joining us on Power Hour. You're in Washington, D.C. at the moment. What's the reaction been like over there to the news that Donald Trump is going to be president again?
Surprisingly muted. You know, when we chatted yesterday, I predicted that there might be riots in response to Trump's victory, which some people on the ground were suggesting, and we haven't really seen that at all. There's been some pretty small protests. But really, after it became clear that Vice President Kamala Harris was not going to come out last night and give her concession speech, she was going to wait until this evening, the crowds that were gathered basically just dissipated and went home, especially the crowd that was at her alma mater, Howard University. They left around midnight when they had Cedric Richmond, one of the campaign managers, come out, tell them that Kamala was not giving remarks. And then even today, for her speech, where she did his speech to the former president, Donald Trump, it was a much smaller group than they might have expected.
Mm.
And so just ancillary to that, you haven't really seen protests or anything of the sort. Now, on my way home from Michigan, there were a lot of Trump fans in the airport who were incredibly excited, wearing all of their Trump merch, and were really just very happy.
Yeah, surfing MAGA hats out yesterday in Sydney. Look, we spoke yesterday about cry rooms being set up for students to cope with the fact that Donald Trump has got in and therapy dogs being used. What have you heard or seen? Have there been any news?
Yeah, so we actually had one of our reporters at The Spectator, Juan T. Phyllis Mill, go to one of the safe spaces at Georgetown University's McCourt School of Public Policy, which is a school for people who are aspiring to be at least adjacent to politics, yet apparently could not handle the results of a Democratic election. They had hot chocolate for students. They had actually printed out child therapy guides for people to express their emotions.
Oh my God.
Apparently there were quite a few students there who were quite dejected and filling out these guides and making kaleidoscopes and doing arts and crafts to apparently cope with the loss. It was really quite sad.
I think someday we need to go in there and say it's going to be okay. But just looking online here, some lefties completely freaking out that Donald Trump is going to be the next president.
I'm sorry.
Magnetic field is about to flip. What? Oh my goodness. Da, 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 da. Okay. Well, I guess.
But my thing is, we can make inferences based on data. And all of the data says that when women are virgins on their wedding night, that is the highest chance they have at a happy, successful
marriage. And you know why?
That's
all
they've ever had. That's all they did.
So why do
you need to know better? And most of the time, if you get better, like if you club with 50 dudes, there's no way you're going to keep the best guy out of the 50. That isn't even a personal thing. Like, I'm talking about numbers. Data.
Why are we debating the human complex experience to data and statistics?
Okay, and I can take it anecdotally where, you know, the girl that's on OnlyFans is saying she's on antidepressants. Like, there's more problems when you sleep with more people. And I think
if you want to make that decision for yourself, that's fine. But
I'm not
sit here and
I'm
judge
not,
other
I'm
people who
are trying to
get
data and
you know?
Statistics.
And
I'm saying, my thing is we can make inferences based on data. And all of the data says that when women are virgins on their wedding night, that is the highest chance they have at a happy, successful.
You know why?
That's why they never had. So why do you need to know better? Most of the time, if you get better, like if you club with 50 dudes, there's no way you're going to keep the best guy out of the 50. This isn't even a personal thing. Like, I'm talking about numbers, data.
Why are we debating the human complex experience to data and statistics?
Okay, and I can take it anecdotally where, you know, the girl that's on OnlyFans is saying she's on antidepressants. Like, there's more problems when you sleep with more people. And I think
if you want to make that decision,
that's where we should all want to be.
That's exactly
right. This is not your grandfather's Republican Party at all, especially with this team of rivals he's put together. Jordan Peterson, this is a reference you can understand, was referring to them as a bunch of Marvel superheroes. Exactly that crowd you just mentioned, Elon, RFK, Jay, Tulsi, Vivek, there's another one, but all around Trump, J.D. Vance helping him get the ball, into the end zone together, each of them sort of working on their key issues. So you're getting more than just Trump. You're getting a team that we've seen now for years in the public eye. It's exciting. If he loses, that's one of the things I'll be most disappointed about the next day. Not just the loss of Trump and the elevation of Kamala, but the loss of all this opportunity, what good that team could do for the country. It's just who looks at Elon and says, no, I don't want you. I don't want your mind helping us. Who looks at RFK and says, I don't want you cleaning up the water that my kids swim in or the food that they eat?
I just have to add a little color, and I'm not patting myself on the back by saying this, but after the story of the Republic rally, I had dinner with him, and I had with Tulsi there, and we chatted about all this.
15 minutes, almost. All right, this is going great.
Alongside Bobby and everything.
How much time does it have, man? It hasn't even filled up a discus. It's fantastic. We got about 20 minutes in with a 1.4.
Good people actually doing things for the right reasons. 4.4.
Coffee bar. So this thing
is just the Avengers Voltron. Whatever that thing is, that was Voltron reference. You could take small groups of robotic lions and put them together into a giant robot with a big sword. That would be pretty cool, and that's what they could do.
When Rumble first started in 2013, they built the platform for the small creator.
Right.
They didn't censor or have biases. They were fair and treated all creators equally. No one thought platforms would censor political conversation or censor opinions around COVID, but they did. Facebook admitted they felt pressure from the Biden and Harris administration. Of course, Rumble did not. They held the line. They're attacked daily for giving us a voice to talk to you. They're attacked by corporate media. They're attacked by governments like France. They're attacked by brand advertisers who refuse to work with them. Corporate America is fighting to remove free speech while Rumble is fighting to keep it. Rumble won't survive with brand advertisers alone. They don't get much of it. So watching our show is the number one way we can ask for support from you. But if you really believe in this fight and you have the means, one major way you can help Rumble survive is by joining Rumble Premium. Join the community that believes in the First Amendment and believes in our human right to free speech. Rumble is offering $10 off with promo code Rubin when you purchase an annual subscription. Go to rumble.com/premium/Rubin and use code Rubin. Like I said, if you have the means to believe in the cause, now is the time to join Rumble Premium. If you don't have the means, we're just happy to watch us right here.
The Progress Action Fund videos made me sick to my stomach, literally featuring, essentially, and the argument that Plan B should be banned according to Republican policy.
The condom broke.
Oh, I might be in the bathroom.
Grace, I'm going to get that now.
Sorry, you can't use that.
Who are you?
I'm the Republican congressman. We banned Plan B.
I'm bad. Oh, you hate me after that?
I won the last
election.
Now let's get back in there so we can give you the news.
Doing great, dude.
So there you go. You're having rampant all the time and desperately need an abortifacient drug, Plan B, available to you over the counter in the United States today, by the way.
All right,
I imagine
make that judgment for yourself.
Since 2000, we have data. Between 2000 and now,
student enrollment has only increased by 5%. Teachers have increased by 10%, a little faster. But administrative bloat has increased by 95%. Let's give that money back to the states. Let them decide how to spend that money wisely and improve student outcomes.
Donald Trump has also talked about that indoctrination you've mentioned, and he wants school diversity initiatives to go, things like critical race theory, gender ideology, any sort of inappropriate racial, sexual, or political content in the classroom. He wants to have removed, to have the federal funding cut for that. That's got to be music to your ears.
Exactly. The schools are focused too much on the LGBTs as opposed to the ABCs. We need to focus on the basics, math, reading, and writing. Then when we spend more money, maybe we'll actually get an improved outcome. We haven't seen that over time, and it's because the schools have activists inside them that would rather focus on controlling the minds of other people's children and shaping them towards a socialist worldview as opposed to improving the educated citizenry in our country. So that's great news. And look, he's also talking about school choice as well, which would empower parents to choose for their own kids.
Well, yeah, talk to me about that. He backs a nationwide universal
program.
Well,
did
you get any program? What would that mean for parents and students? Yeah, the U.S. currently is ridiculous. You live and you're assigned to a school based on your address. It makes no sense.
Okay.
It's enormous monopoly power, total control, because if you don't like it, you can't go anywhere else. You're stuck. You're trapped. Parents have no say in the current system. But in states like Florida, they've started to figure out that if you let the money follow the child, that creates more competition. The public schools get better in response to that competition, and parents have a say in their own kids' education by choosing the school that aligns with their values. Trump has already said he would sign something called the Educational Choice for Children Act. This would be done at a nationwide level. It's already passed out of House committee. The speaker in the U.S., Mike Johnson, supports the initiative. Trump again said he would sign it. And now the Republicans have control over the Senate, and it's looking like we're going to keep control in the House. So there's a trifecta making its way to the U.S. Republicans should pass their own party platform issue with school choice, get it to Donald Trump's desk immediately. This will stop the leftward drift in America because it starts in the classroom. When you can tell young kids that big government is the solution to all of your problems, they're going to go vote for big government in the future. But if we have school choice, you strike at the root. You let families choose. They're not going to choose left-wing indoctrination. They're going to choose the basics. And when people can think rationally, they're going to realize that government is the solution. Having families... the families are the best form of government that there are.
Okay. Is this guy saying something to me? Nope. Okay. All right. We need to keep on keeping on. All right.
So if you watch your professor shred the family proclamation in front of a student on video, this episode is brought to you by Scripture Notes. Scripture Notes is the program that I use for all of my research, for all of my daily scripture study. It's the best tool available anywhere. Go to scripturenotes.com. That's scripturenotes.com. Here we go. So BYU professor, mathematics professor David Hardin, I'm putting his name out there because it is everywhere already, this is going to blow up, had a reaction to the election, the presidential election, and he went and posted something on his door for students, for faculty, for all to see, and This is what he posted on the door. I'll go ahead and read this for you. It says, if you supported Donald Trump in the recent election, then this scripture is for you. Right? First of all, what are you doing as a BYU professor posting something post-election to people who voted against the person that you won? This is just very, it's unintelligent. This is not a smart thing to do, right? And then he quotes Mosiah 29, 26 to 27. I'm going to read these two scriptures, okay? And he is conflating these scriptures with those who chose Donald Trump, right? Here it is. Now, it is not uncommon that the voice of the people desireth anything contrary to that which is right. Talking about democracy. But it is common for the lesser part of the people to desire that which is not right. Therefore, this shall ye observe and make it your law, to do your business by the voice of the people. Okay? It's a principle that's being put out there. And if the time comes that the voice of the people doth choose iniquity, then is the time that the judgments of God will come upon you. Yea, then is the time he will visit you with great destruction, even as he has hitherto visited this land. Okay? So, you know what? If he's got this opinion, I don't care. That's up to him. Whatever. Right? I don't care that he votes for Kamala Harris. I don't care if he votes for, you know, Jill Stein, you know, of the Green Party. I don't care. Do what you want. But to go out publicly in a university and put this out there where faculty and students, et cetera, are going to see this is just, it's not a very smart thing to do. And then to bring scripture into it is, you know, what are your students going to think when they see this? They come in there. And what if they are those that did vote for Trump? What are they going to think? Are they going to be able to say anything? Are they going to be comfortable around you? Right? He finishes off by saying the following. By almost all objective standards, Donald Trump is an evil man. Now that you've made your choice, you should expect this prophecy to be fulfilled. Okay? All right, again, fine, whatever. These are his personal opinions. I have, whatever, I don't care. But to post them publicly is not, I'm guessing this is against BYU policy to something. It's got to be somewhere. To say it is one thing. To go out and post this on your door, that seems to me like it should be contrary. Of course, you can see many of the halls at BYU, especially in the social sciences department, with pride flags and trans statements and a number of different things going through the social sciences. I've done something on that previously in an episode. Now, then, a student, by the way, this gets picked up by Liz of TikTok, and goes out on TikTok, it goes out on, I'm going to show a picture of him here because this comes up and is shown on this as well. But it gets picked up on TikTok, it gets picked up on X, it goes out on Facebook, right? It's going out everywhere on social media, and there are hundreds of thousands, perhaps by now, million plus or millions of views of people that have seen this. And a good portion of those people are going to be Latter-day Saints. So then a student, apparently, it looks like it's a student, decided to confront the professor in his office, at his office. And he goes up there, say what you want about this, I think it's actually a positive. He goes out there and he places the family proclamation up on the professor's door. The professor's not really happy about that, and this is what he does.
Evil is Kamala is better, sir? She wants to kill babies.
No, she doesn't want to kill babies.
She's pro-abortion.
Well, and again, I don't care about the vote. The vote has nothing to do with this.
Did you take care of the family proclamation
in front of you? Because
okay, before I finish with this, you need to understand something here again. Obviously, he's very brazen about this, his feelings. Maybe he's overwhelmed with emotion because his candidate didn't win. He probably is very, how shall we say this, doesn't really like President-elect Donald Trump. But he knows he's on camera. He knows that his face, picture of his face and of his statement previously has been seen by hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people already. And now a student confronts him with a camera, and he is brazenly going to take the family proclamation and rip it up on video. What does this tell you? Decide for yourself what that means. But, again, not real smart, but perhaps he just doesn't like it.
That's modern revelation. I have that on one video.
Well,
that's modern revelation, sir. From a prophet.
You're not a prophet.
I'm not a prophet, but Gordon B. is a prophet. And he's calling us over prophets.
Why wouldn't you say something to
them?
I'm a coward. You're the one that's just...
Why wouldn't you say, yes, you're on video?
Well, I hope you have a nice day.
Okay. So, anyway, look, I wish this was a one-off, right? You know from my channel that this is not a one-off. I think that there are a lot of things that have been cleaned up. I think that Shane Reese is the right guy. I think Justin Collins, his right-hand man, is the right guy. I think they've done a number of things. I think that Elder Clark has done a number of good things. I think that they are, regardless of what gets done in those areas, you need to know that when you send your kid to BYU, that doesn't mean everything is hunky-dory. Right? I know many, many people that have kids that have been radicalized at BYU because of professors that are anti-family proclamation, that are pro-LGBTQ. And when I say that, I don't mean pro the individuals. I mean the movement. I mean they're very, very supportive of the Pride movement. They're pro-critical theory. In essence, many of them are Marxists. And that's not like it's everywhere. It's not everywhere. All right? BYU is a great, amazing place, but that's the issue. If you send your kid to a state school somewhere, more locally, or outside of Utah, right? I'm here in Arizona. If I send my kids to ASU, you don't have to worry about a conflation of the gospel and authoritative figures like professors starting to tell you that, hey, you ought to start thinking differently. Let me deprogram what you have learned from your parents over the last 18 years. Because that's what those individuals do. They feel that that is their calling. And for the most part, you go to all of the other professors, they're great, they're amazing, right? They have strong testimonies. They help the students have great spiritual experiences and solidify their testimonies. But there are several bad apples, and your students and you should know that. I'm a huge fan of BYU, not just the sports teams. I love their mission. I don't know exactly how they're going to get all of this done because of the infiltration of the religion of academia into their halls. And I don't know that it's even the best thing to go out and say, well, let's go get this guy fired. Let's have all these people fired. It's a systemic issue, right? It's the environment that they're in. It's the people that they hire. Where are they bringing them from? What indoctrination have they already had? How did they learn getting their PhD? What was the framework? What was the worldview that was brought to them? I do have a positive episode shortly that I will be bringing in to BYU because I want to show that there's a lot of positive there also, a lot of positive there. But you've got to have your eyes wide open. We do not live in a world anymore where these things are not finding their way into every corner and nook and crevice, including in places like BYU. I do think the student stood up and did something about this. I think it's the right thing. You know, there's a lot that is, the squeaky wheel sometimes is what gets the attention. And those on the hard left that have the loudest voices, they've always had the loudest voices, have been very effective, even in places like BYU. I'd say especially in places like BYU. In shutting people up, in casting stones by using ad hominem attacks on white supremacy, critical race theory, misogyny, all of the intersectional stones that are tossed at others. But this student came in and stood up and did something about it, put up a family proclamation on the professor's door. I think that's a great thing. It's truth. Now, I don't think there's an issue in, again, the vote. I don't care if this person voted for Kamala. Who cares? Go vote your conscience. That is democracy. And we need to all support that. That's not the issue. The issue is what he posted on his door. And then the ripping up of the family proclamation. And I do think it's important that we stand for something. Remember Gordon B. Hinckley's book? Right? Standing for something. By the way, this is the subtitle of the book. 10 Neglected Virtues That Will Heal Our Hearts and Homes. Right? When you stand for something, that will help bring healing. When you are not anchored to virtues and truths, then you fall into things like depression and anxiety and chaos starts to enter in. You need to stand for something. President Hinckley, of course, is a prophet at the time that the Family Proclamation was written. The Family Proclamation stands for something, which we should all do. Thanks for listening.
Is it still recording? Doesn't look like it. Looks like it died. No. It's still recording. Even in shut down state, it looks like it was still recording. Oh my gosh.
Section. My name is Grace Cooper, and to all my subscribers and people who watch these episodes regularly, I just want to say that today's video might feel a bit different, and that's because I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that you guys might share this video with some of your friends on the left who I'm sure are texting you or posting online to appreciate why you voted the way you did, wondering if your friendships can survive this crisis, or hopefully, again, fingers crossed, this lands in the YouTube algorithm for people who are scared of the Trump presidency. They're wondering, why on earth this 23-year-old woman would vote for Trump and vote against her rights, human rights, all of that. And today, I'm not even going to try to change your mind. Maybe I do. That'd be cool. But I just want to try and bridge the gap, maybe even share some of the joy and the unity that half the country is feeling. Before we dive into this, though, make sure that you like this video. If you've not already, please subscribe to the Comment Section channel. And if you're new, please like it. You can stick around. And, of course, ring that notification bell to stay up to date on all of our episodes. All right, so first of all, while I still have your attention at the top of this video, if you guys listen to nothing else in this episode, I just want you to know, we have already survived a Trump presidency. We've done that before. You lived through 2016 to 2020, just like we survived a Biden presidency. I mean, even though we kind of barely skated by, considering the state of the economy and being on the brink of war, it will be okay, even if this is not the outcome that you were expecting. And yes, losing sucks. I posted this on TikTok last night, but we literally have all been there. 2020 felt awful. It was literally terrible. It is so hard when you lose and the election feels so consequential like it has for the last two cycles. But I can remind you and say that under Trump, our money did go further. Our border was more secure. We had peace across the globe because world leaders respected him. They were intimidated by him and his power, which is objectively a very good thing. And millions of Americans, your friends, your neighbors, your parents, you don't know, don't ever need to be independent. And they voted because they want that feeling back again. And most importantly, I have to say this because I've been seeing it all over my social media, especially from my lib friends. In Trump's first term, your rights were not taken away. And yes, we're going to do civics and we'll talk about what we made, all of that. But we were very free, and I genuinely think that we are going to get even freer in Trump's second term. And if you did have a terrible time starting in 2016, I will very gently and genuinely kindly urge you to take a second and just look inward and evaluate whether that was really because of Trump and the things that he did to you or because of what people told you about Trump and wanted you to believe. Because in my experience of being somebody who is on the right but growing up in a very liberal city, working in Hollywood, being friends with like 95% liberals growing up, appreciated by Trump and by the media has been But I understand that you still have concerns, so let's talk about it. Let's dive in to all of these fears. Now, I've been seeing my friends on the other side lamenting, being genuinely scared, genuinely very concerned over their futures and their safety, and they continue to cite one big overarching issue, human rights. Everybody's talking about human rights, so women's rights, gay rights, minority rights, most specifically. So let's start with abortion, which was basically the issue of the 2024 election. I have to laugh a little bit, and this might ruffle some feathers, but this was kind of a non-issue in the 2024 election. Like, Kamala was VP for 4 years, Biden was president for 4 years, and they did not overturn the Dobbs decision. It is not possible. It is ridiculous for her to run on that issue and promise you guys that she will be able to fix the situation. I mean, that was like the backbone of her campaign, and it was for nothing. It was just to get everybody emotionally riled up. And on the other side of the aisle, regardless of what Democrats have said, Trump has reiterated time and time again that he will not sign a federal abortion ban. That is not what he wants. He got Roe v. Wade overturned because he believed that it should be the power of the state. And in fact, since Roe v. Wade was overturned, abortions have actually increased in this country. Access has increased in most states. So the abortion bill you can freely travel if you need that care. And that is something that Trump believes in. Of course, this is, you know, much to the dismay of many pro-life voters, voter therapy. I'm pro-life. I don't really like any of this. But you know what? Still voted for the man. Trump believes strongly in the extension of the life of the mother, which is something that you guys talk about all the time,
but
you're very concerned. He's on record having concerns with 6-week heartbeat bills. His wife wrote an entire book where she talks about her pro-choice beliefs. I mean, guys, will say why incessantly about this issue. Like, Trump almost lost voters because of his stance on abortion. On the right side of the aisle, meanwhile, Kamala and Biden were you know, take him or leave him as he is. He does not play games like the rest of D.C. politicians. That's why he's so refreshing and why we like him. Now, the same women that are obviously very concerned with abortion are also concerned with pro-life laws in these red states impacting the care that they can receive. And so I will say this, once and for all, miscarriage care does not equal abortion. It does not equal abortion reproductive care. And if your doctors do not understand the difference between those two things and refuse you care, that is medical malpractice. That is not Trump's fault. Trump did not do that to you or to those doctors. That is medical malpractice. And unfortunately, medical malpractice is the third leading cause of death in the United States. So let's take this issue up with the medical industry and big pharma and not blame it on Trump. But hopefully, our community will shake things up. Hopefully, we will get to that corruption, because it is unacceptable if they refuse you care because they are worried about what's going on in these red states, because none of those laws prevent you from getting miscarriage care or the reproductive care that you need. With stories like Amber Thurman in Georgia, Trump abortion bans, of which there are none because he did not make those laws, did not kill her. No matter what Kamala said, no matter what the media said, she died very tragically, very unfortunately, because of abortion complications and delayed care. The abortion pill put her into septic shock. She waited hours to go to the hospital, and for some godforsaken reason, when she got there, her doctor said, you know, we'll wait until tomorrow to do a BNC or a hysterectomy. We'll just push it off. Here's some antibiotics. Just sit here in his bed. We'll figure it out tomorrow. And she died. Another thing people don't bring up is that this hospital is also one of the poorest reviewed in the entire state of Georgia. 2 stars. And no, those reviews are not just about Amber. I read through hundreds of them this morning. They are all about their own individual experiences. They are not in light of the story. That hospital is just that bad, and that is a problem in and of itself. Now, Pat Pond, you guys might know her on TikTok. I think it's there. TikTok page is just called The Pond. She's an amazing creator. In the following, after talking about her and her husband's infertility journey, the death of their firstborn daughter, Edie, her IVF journey, which means that her second daughter, Matilda, has needed real miscarriage and fertility care firsthand, and she needed this for living in a red state. Never gotten political. She hasn't really shared much of these stories at all, but this is what she put yesterday. She was talking about the stories people do know and they don't know, and she said the one that you do know is me losing Edie. As she passed at 25-week gestation, I was immediately offered an induction or medical abortion. My life was not in any danger, but my body was not in labor and did not recognize my baby had passed yet. No doctor even suggested that I would be forced to carry my baby until my body decided to deliver her or until my life was in danger. This was very clearly a stillbirth. Some would say miscarriage or abortion, although it's not. That was properly quickly handled with no mention of the law in place. This hospital is extremely well known and would not risk breaking any laws for the old me or anyone else in the situation. This was completely legal. On the next slide, she says the story that I've now shared is that when I was pregnant with Matilda, after my cervage and when I was told my water broke at 21 weeks, I was pushed heavily to have an immediate abortion. My life was not in danger, and neither was Matilda. Her heart was still beating. Again, this is in a red state. The doctors are saying, okay, things don't look great. You should go ahead and have an abortion. I was in the same accredited hospital in a red state, and was at gestation past the abortion law permits legal abortion. This nurse told me that the likelihood of your baby living is slim to none, so we can take care of this as soon as you'd like to prevent you from more hurt. This, like, makes me want to cry because I've seen her daughter, and she's just so beautiful. Obviously, I did not take that option, even though this nurse thought that I was crazy for choosing to stay pregnant, and Matilda is here, alive, and well. But the point that I am making is that the media has been sharing extremely rare cases, similar to mine, often involving medical malpractice, to scare you into believing that your options to handle a very wanted pregnancy with complications are limited and dangerous. It is simply not the case. Now, she went on and just talked about a few other things. She shared messages that she's been receiving from OBGYNs and labor and delivery nurses saying, thank you for sharing that. Thank you for saying what the media will not tell women. And so she shared this, and I'm sharing this with you to hopefully show you that it is not always what the media makes it out to be. Find better doctors, hold them accountable, do not be afraid, because the care that you need in these rare situations is legal, and Trump does not want to stay in the way of that at all. In fact, he wants to help moms. That's why he got RFK Jr. involved in his campaign. They will fight to hold doctors and Big Pharma accountable, to hold our food conglomerates accountable, so that moms can stop worrying about what their kids are eating at the accelerating rates of chronic illness and obesity in this country. By the way, one of the very cool things that, you know, Trump 2.0 has done is that he has surrounded himself by people who disagree with him. I mean, RFK is incredibly pro-choice. And you know what? Even pro-life people are excited about him because they know that even though they disagree with him on that, they know that he will do good things in the medical industry and that he will help protect them. Some people are not. There's a
diversity of opinion. Is it doing okay? Wow. 3.4 megabytes is all it took. All right. We're going to go ahead and stop.